Live from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, the Total Education Show, the talk shop for teachers, parents, and administrators. Here's your host of the show, Neil Haley, the Total Tutor.
We're back, the Total Celebrity Show on the Total Education Network. Again, TotalTutor.net for more information. Twitter, Total Tutor, Neil S. Haley, Facebook, LinkedIn, Neil Haley, Instagram, Total Tutor, Pinterest, Neil Haley, and Google Plus, Neil Haley. And I have one of the most interesting stories. A quick story, because I have so many questions for this super stealer. It's funny, I posted on a Facebook post. I've interviewed two outstanding Steeler linebackers, the best Steeler linebackers in LaVon Kirkland, and also I posted on my Facebook Chad Brown, and I said, you know what, I want another one of those linebackers in that picture. And two hours later, I get a LinkedIn request from Robin Cole. I said, holy cow, that could add another one of the great super Steeler linebackers. So I'm so excited to welcome the program, Pro Bowler, two-time Super Bowl champion, Robin Cole. Robin, thanks for calling. Isn't that an interesting story? I posted it on Facebook, and I made a comment. I said, can somebody get me another one of the super Steeler linebackers? And then somehow we get connected.
Yeah, isn't that something? That really is. And I mean, that was one of the handful of times that I'll get on LinkedIn and help going through it. I said, man, I got a whole lot of people asking for requests, so I better get on here and kind of clear some of these things up. But there you were.
And it's funny, but definitely it's a great connection. Hope that we'll finally get to meet in person someday. I know you're busy, but I'd love to have you in the TV studio one time to have such a great legendary Steeler. I remember growing up watching you. Now, let's kind of jump right specifically enough to going into the whole Steeler thing, because definitely for our flagship station in Pittsburgh and how they really want to understand this. When you were in college and you were getting ready to be drafted, did you have a favorite team you wanted to go to? That would be an interesting story. Again, you're from L.A., and probably Pittsburgh was not the first one on your list, was it, Robin?
Well, you know what? It got to a point that where it was. Now, that wasn't the team that I kind of cheered for. I got to a point, and early on when I was in high school, it was a team, you know, I would pick and cheer for certain teams based on the character and the way that they played the football game. And as I got to college, I began to realize, after understanding a little bit about how the National Football League worked, I understood that there was a draft, and sometimes you don't get that choice. It began to change when you had guys start to cry about, I want to go to my team. It's almost like a guy that have a basketball, and he's he's only so good, and he gets upset because he don't get on the best team, and then he takes his basketball and go home. And so I didn't want to feel like I was one of those kind of guys that, well, I want to take my ball and go home because I didn't get a chance to go to the team that I chose. But it wasn't really my choice. To me, it was the team that wanted you and thought that you fit for them. It was their choice because they figured that you would be a good fit for them, opposed to you trying to choose and say, well, I fit for a certain team. And you may not fit for a certain team because they may have a couple of players that are better than you in that position at that time. So by the time I became a senior, it didn't make any difference to me which team that I had chosen me or played for, because I had visited with quite a few of the scouts, and I realized that I got to know quite a few of the scouts that had come in at the University of New Mexico, and I realized that it was more than five teams that wanted me and thought that maybe if I was there at the time that they could have drafted me, I would have ended up being on their team and end up playing for them. But as a young player being from California, I was a guy that I followed the Oakland Raiders because they were a California team.
Right.
And that I would see them play more than I would see San Francisco. But San Francisco at that time wasn't a team that would win as many games as the Oakland Raiders. So I kind of leaned towards the Oakland Raiders a little bit more.
So you get drafted draft day, and it's funny, we're talking on draft day, and it'll air next week, but for our listeners out there, it's April 30th, and it's draft day. You're sitting there waiting for the phone call to ring, and when you find out it's the Steelers, how welcoming were the Steelers once you got drafted? Kind of tell us that story.
The Steelers were very welcoming once I got drafted. I didn't realize that at that time that they had retired simply because I was on the other side of the United States of America. It's a little different than ESPN today. And they're understanding that you've got some players that decided to retire or whatever. But today they just leave your team. But a couple of players that retired, and Andy Russell as outside linebacker for the Pittsburgh Steelers, an All-Pro, should be in the Hall of Fame.
Definitely.
And then another guy had retired, his best friend, which we called, which was Ranger. That was his nickname. His name was Ray Mansfield. He was the center. And both of those guys kind of started together, played 14 years together, and they retired the same year. And so when I was called, they had shared with me, I received a telephone call, 10 minutes to 10 o'clock. Their draft was coming up at 10 o'clock, and a guy by the name of Woody Woodenhofer, which was the linebacker coach at the time, he had called me and shared with me why they thought I would fit good for them, why they were drafting me, and they had shared with me they were drafting me to replace Andy Russell. And they felt that they had pieces to the puzzle still there to make another run and maybe another championship down the road. So I was excited about it and never knew that I would end up playing with some of the greatest, well, one of the greatest football teams of all time, and then some of the greatest football players of all time. When we look at team-wise, I don't think there's any other team that has more guys in the Hall of Fame, that one team, than the guy that I played with.
And I could tell already, Robin, especially if you're still in Pittsburgh, you bleed black and gold for sure. And you definitely, the respect you have for the Steeler organization is definitely, I'm sure, you have a high regard for them for sure.
Oh, for sure, definitely. The Steelers were about football. The Rooney family was about football. When they decided and made a decision to not be no longer the laughingstock, and this is the way they share their story, to no longer be the laughingstock of the National Football League, they're going to make a change. And that change started with Chuck Noll. And they brought Chuck Noll in, and he had been a part of some winning programs. And things began to change. The attitude of players began to change. They started bringing players in with leadership attitudes. I mean, we had a lot of guys on our team that were captains of their college football teams. I was the captain at that University of New Mexico. I was in my high school. I was a high school captain of the football team. And all the way through, it just wasn't enough places to be a captain for the Pittsburgh Steelers. But a lot of players considered me that for the Pittsburgh Steelers in my latter years.
Definitely, for sure, Robin. And you learned also about how important it is to give back to the community, being with the Rooneys, right? The Rooney family does just such a tremendous job with that.
Yeah, the Rooney family does a tremendous job with that. And a lot of players kind of buy into it when they get here. But I have to share with you, that kind of started with me back when I was in college.
Okay.
I was taught by a guy, his name was John Stilecki, Big John Stilecki. Big John Stilecki stood about 5'7", and he was about 5'7" by 5'7". He was a restaurant owner. He owned two restaurants, and he was a phenomenal cook and a preparer of foods. And I love the guy still today. He's passed on. But he was just a great friend of mine. I mean, he became a father figure for me at the University of New Mexico. Okay? And nothing illegal about nothing that he's ever did for me at all. But he became a father figure. He just, I liked him. He wouldn't let me work for him. I wanted to work at a restaurant. He said, no, you focus on football. You're going to be good at football. And I said, oh, John, golly. But he began to share with me. He said, you know what? What you need to do is you have to get involved with the community. He was also a scout for Major League Baseball.
Okay.
At some time. And he shared with me, he said, when you get to Pittsburgh, but it happened even before I got there, because he began to teach me, he said, you need to get involved with the community. And he said, you need to start to do some charity work for somebody. And he realized that I was part of my personality.
Right.
Okay. Outgoing, being around people, never having anything negative to say about people. So he I got involved with the Special Olympics when I was in college.
Oh, good.
And I started going around doing things there. And then when I came here to the Pittsburgh Steelers, I was kind of, I was already involved there. So it was something that I knew that I would do. And it's, And the way to get involved in the community is to give your time.
Okay? Definitely.
And so I began to give my time. I remember when I got here, I was 23 years old when I started working with the March of Dimes. And I worked with the March of Dimes for several years, and then from the March of Dimes to the American Heart Association, and being, you know, we did that kind of work. So I've been doing that kind of work, charitable contributions, and being involved in that type of work for quite a few years. And it was just something that was just right up the alley for also the Steeler family and the Pittsburgh Steelers, the guys that wanted to do that. Now, there are some guys that didn't get involved that way, but a lot of us did, and a lot of us continue to do that. And then from there, I guess after I was diagnosed with prostate cancer back in 2004, I decided to start a foundation of my own called the Obadiah Cole Foundation, which was named after my father, which had passed away when I was 20 years old because of prostate cancer.
Wow.
And I realized that there wasn't a lot being said about prostate cancer. I didn't see it, not visually.
Definitely.
Not that much when I was diagnosed with it. I'm saying, wow. And then the more I learned, the more I realized, wow, this is a disease that's almost an epidemic. I look at it as, 30,000 men a year are passing away, 2,500 men a month, 83 men a day. 83 men a day passing away because of prostate cancer, and we don't talk about it.
No, we don't, because it's something that is embarrassing to people to go ahead and do that, to say that. Hey, meaning like to kind of talk about how we need to get checked out. You know how women with breast cancer were with prostate cancer. If we're not mentioning that and saying, hey, let's make sure you get your prostate checked. Hey, we're men. We can handle everything. We don't need to go to the doctor. You know, at times and different things like that. So you're a great spokesperson to be able to go out there and tell people this, because you get diagnosed early enough, you can save your life. If not, it's going to be too late.
It can save your life. You're exactly right. That's the key. Early detection is the key. And so we started a foundation, and what we do is we bring about awareness. We need to do more of that. I wish I had $1 million. But if I had that, I would been able to present this throughout the United States on video, or not so much on video, but billboards, and get checked. You got to get checked, okay? I mean, golly, if we had a war going on and we're losing 30,000 men a year in a war, you know what? The United States would be up in arms.
Yes, definitely.
It would be up in arms, okay? So we're still young at this. We still try to bring about the breast cancer. We've been supporting breast cancer for a ton of years. We're throwing billions of dollars at cancer research. We need to do more research. We need to, right now, we need to, as we do research, we need to help guys right now, the ones that the lives that can be saved. Let's save some lives while we're still doing the research.
Definitely.
And so we needed to take some, we need to take more of the dollars and put towards education, and put towards awareness, and then also helping guys with blood screening and testing.
So, Robin, for your foundation, do you have a yearly fundraiser that you do for your foundation?
Yes, we do. On Father's Day, we have a Father's Day walk and race. We do it right from Heinz Field. Okay, every year we do our fundraiser, and we're trying to grow in the numbers with more walkers. But that's one of our main fundraisers. That's where we bring about the awareness, the most awareness. And then we have other events that we're going to have coming out on the road. We look forward to us to have another golf tournament, hopefully next year, that we'll do. We're continuing to try to raise funds for ourselves. And then you're always knocking on doors to get more people involved, more men involved. We have people that may not get involved in certain things, but, everybody's reaching for the same dollars, and a lot of times it's hard, especially because they just, I don't know what it's all about, because they don't think that it's not that they don't think that it's not important. It's kind of, most people, when it comes to doing things and throwing money at something, we're going to throw it at the youth first, the young kids, if it's programs to help young kids. That's going to be first, and then second, I think it'll align. It's going to be a program that will help. That's going to help our women, because that's important. Mama's important,
right?
Okay, and then somewhere down the line, you'll get to the men. There's a whole lot of other things that's going to be before that. But if we got men alive, got 30,000 men. If we got 30,000 men, we can save every year. Then that's more men that's in the system that's working, that's able to help with some of these other projects.
Definitely, Robin. It's a definite great thing. And when you let me know when you're getting closer to the walk, we'll make sure we have you back on for a little bit just to promote the event before June. I'll reach out to me and we'll just get a quick little interview just to promote the Father's Day walk for sure.
That would be beautiful, Neil. I would really appreciate that.
Anything I can do for you, Robin, and you introduced me to some more Super Steelers to come on the show, I would greatly appreciate that in return. And I'll use my social media clout because I got 16,000 Twitter followers and a good Facebook following and different things, and the radio network. We'll do whatever we can to help raise money for prostate cancer and help you and help others not have to go through this tough time, and we don't lose lives, as you said, so many lives that we aren't educated about. And I'm glad on the show you were able to do that. Now I'm going to step you back for a second, then I'm going to go back to life after football. Your greatest Steeler moment. I mean, this is something when you're talking to somebody, when I watched you in the Super Bowl, definitely against the Rams in 1979. By the way, Robin, I was 6 years old at that time, but I was such a huge Super Steeler fan, 78 and 79. Tell me what your favorite Steeler moment, because, you were a cornerstone in the 80s for the Steelers, which had some very good teams, and it was an ups and downs leading to the 90s for sure. But so you had for sure.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Well, my greatest moment would be back in 1979. I kicked off before that, though. I had some great games in 1978 and had some pretty good games in 1977, my rookie year. But the 79 season was my I felt should have been my first Pro Bowl year at the outside linebacking position. I felt that, and I don't take anything away from the guys that played and the guys that did go there. But we just had a great season, and we got to the Super Bowl, so we did have a great season defensively. We had a great season in 78 offensively, considered one of our best teams. But in 1979, the Super Bowl, it would have been the Super Bowl. It would have been Super Bowl 14 because I was a runner up for the MVP for that game. And you know what happens with MVPs? It kind of changes your career.
Yes.
Kind of changes the direction for the MVP of the Super Bowl. But Terry Bradshaw ended up being the MVP. But they had me up until the fourth, right in the fourth quarter, to tear through that last touchdown pass, and then it switched. And I say this all the time. I say, look here, quarterback, all he has to do is have two good plays, and he gets MVP. And I said, if you're a defensive player, you got to play four quarters. That's kind of what it is. That game, and if you watch that game and you see that game, you can see that that was a very fun game for me, a very memorable game. Now, what makes it most memorable is because I got a chance to play in California, where I was from, in Pasadena. I got a chance to be in front of the home crowd, and I really didn't care how much the tickets cost, even though it took all the whole Super Bowl check to get the whole family in the game, but still. I had an opportunity to get them to the game, watch that Super Bowl, and it's so memorable that they never forgot it. They remember it all their lives, and I remember all the good things that happened in that game, and I'll never forget them. But not only myself, but just to be able to play with the guys that I played with, and when everything is just falling into place, it was tremendous. That was probably one of my better games. or one of my best memorable games. Now, I've had a lot of great, a lot of good games, and a lot of times I would get interviewed. A lot of times when the game was, when we lost the game,
right?
Simply because a lot of times we lost the game, I still played the same game that I've always played. I wasn't too up and down when it came to games, unless I was injured. Had a challenge with something, legs or back or neck or whatever. And if you play football, you're gonna have a problem with those legs.
Yes.
My memory is always the guys that I play with. Okay, when you play a team sport, your memory has to be who you play with. Now, I'm a little different than a lot of guys, and that's just part of being a captain of a football team. You know that you alone, you don't win a game.
Right.
It's your team. It's like being a captain in the army. I mean, it's your team. You're only as good as your team.
Exactly.
And you realize that. You don't pat yourself on the back about what you did and your success. You pat the team on the back. And so I'm just so still today, so grateful that I had the opportunity to play with the team that I played after going through what I went through as a young football player, never being on a winning team, and then to play on a team that you win at all. The biggest winning of it all is the Super Bowl. Now, I'm not taking anything away from the national championship. National championship game is a phenomenal game. That's really big. That's huge, too. But the college that I went to, we didn't even sniff a national championship. I don't even know if they even I didn't even know if they even knew where the University of New Mexico was.
Definitely.
Okay, so when it came to some of these colleges. So.
You're one of the most famed, I guess, New Mexico football players for sure. Were you ever inducted to the Hall of Fame in New Mexico?
I was the first guy to ever be drafted in the first round out of the University of New Mexico. In fact, there's only been two of us, myself and Brian Urlacher, which he'll be in the Hall of Fame.
Definitely. All right, so life after football, what are you currently doing? Because, Robin, we're close to running out of time.
What I'm doing currently is two things. Number one, I'm a motivational speaker. Okay, that's what I do. Okay. I'm a presenter. I like motivational speaking. I like talking. I like inspiring people, building people. That's what I like to do. I'm easy to find. But motivation and teamwork, presenting in front of people, that's what I do. I enjoy that. That's my purpose. The other thing that I do is I'm in the fitness business. I equip. Okay, design fitness centers for schools, apartment complexes, hotels, clubhouses, whoever for fitness needs. That's what I do. I fell in love with that. Number one, I fell in love with that for schools because I came from a physical standpoint. I thought I took pretty good care of myself, and I like that aspect of taking care of yourself, getting yourself in shape, helping kids learn how to take care of themselves so they're not overweight. And then if they become overweight because they had training in the early years, they know how to get themselves back in shape.
Great.
So I still work with a real good friend of mine with Webster's Fitness here in this area, and we go in and we teach. As far as schools are concerned, we go in and we teach these kids. We have a curriculum that we offer. We teach these kids how to take care of themselves, how to get their bodies in shape, how to eat well. Those are the two things that I do. I spend the most time in the foundation.
Well, fantastic. Robin, where's the best place we can find information on you to learn all about those different things? Do you have a website?
Yeah, you can go to my website. You can go to robincole56.com. You can always Google me because that information, it'll connect you to the information, either the website of the obcolefoundation.org I'm easy to find.
All right. Well, Robin, I'm going to reach out to you, just text you, get you on 5 to 7 minutes before the event for Father's Day and any event that you want to promote. And we have to have coffee someday or have lunch. I'd love to have that opportunity to talk to you and tell you what I'm doing as an entrepreneur and what we're trying to do to help others. So thanks again for calling, Robin, and best of luck to you.
Fantastic, and God bless. And just I still thank all the Steelers fans out there in Steelers Nation. Keep up the good work. We love you.
And yet the whole world's listening to you, Robin. We got stations in London. We got stations all over the country, and are all Steelers fans. So that's the great thing of getting you on the program. So best of luck.
Super good.
All right, take it, Robin.
It.
See ya.
Okay, right,
bye-bye. You're listening to Total Celebrity Show, and we'll be back in just a moment. We're back to the Total Celebrity Show on the Total Education Network. Again, TotalTutor.net for more information. Twitter, TotalTutor, Neil S. Haley, Facebook, LinkedIn, Neil Haley, Instagram, TotalTutor, Pinterest, Neil Haley, and Google+. Final day in April. I can't believe it's going to be May tomorrow, and I was wearing a coat last week, so hopefully that won't happen. And my guest, he knows about a beautiful place where he's calling from right now, but I'm excited to welcome the program, NBA legend, Arizona State Hall of Famer Alton Lister. Alton, thanks for calling, and how are you?
Hey, man, if I was doing any better, they'd probably think it would be illegal. It is. Hey, I'm in San Diego, California. It is about 75 degrees, and it's such a sunny day. you know, this is just one of the most beautiful places in the world.
Well, and I remember going to La Jolla and then San Diego and went to Mass, Sunday Mass, and it was up in the hill in San Diego, and it was so gorgeous. And you're right, it's such a beautiful place. And for the Chargers to consider leaving San Diego, what a crying shame, for sure, if that happens.
Yeah, exactly. So everybody is trying to just sitting at the edge of the seat trying to see what the decision is going to be made on that whole situation. So that'll be a very interesting topic when and if it happens.
Exactly, for sure. All right, so let's kind of go into your career. Again, you're a little bit taller than me, Alton. By the way, I'm 6'10", and you're 7 feet. And when you were growing up, did everyone say, hey, he should be a basketball player? Was it just something that came to you, or did people ask you with that height, being so tall?
Well, I tell you, when I was growing up, I was extremely shy and felt very uncomfortable with my size, my height, all the dynamics of being tall. And then it seemed like that's all the question that was asked of me is, how tall are you? And I was young, so I really didn't know how to, you know, navigate through that. But and it's still today. I mean, it's not one day someone has asked me, how tall am I? Or, you know, am I a former NBA player? And the fortunate thing is I haven't gained a lot of weight. Okay. And actually I've lost weight since my playing days. So I still look like I can play. So, I mean, it's amazing how people still come up to me and you know, and ask me, am I either if I play or if I was a former NBA player. So it's a good thing. I keep it all positive.
Exactly, Alton. And so basically through that time, did you just kind of flock to basketball and say, I'm going to play this sport? Or was it something that people kind of pushed you into it, saying, you're this tall, you have to play?
Well, I tell you, I tried out. I was extremely tall. I got cut in the eighth grade.
Oh, my.
And then I changed professions. I went to be I was going to be the tallest trombone player, in the history. When my freshman year, I was in a band, and the marching band. And so I tried that for a while and liked it. And then my brother, who was one of my biggest idols, God rest his soul, and he was a guy that I looked up to. My brother played high school basketball, college. He got drafted by the Cleveland Cavaliers, and he had a long career overseas.
Right.
So I kind of, was kind of looking at his situation, thinking, hey, that might be a possibility. But I hadn't developed. I was a late bloomer. I was just extremely tall and extremely thin. And so I struggled with it for a while. And then once I started getting into organized basketball, you know, I started to come into my own.
And that's really good for a lot of guys that are that tall to not start playing the game so early, because your body's still growing and you're trying to catch up things. I didn't start playing basketball till like the fifth or sixth grade, and I'm glad I didn't play when I was younger, because I probably would just tripped over the ball. And then to hear about specifically when you talk about eighth grade being cut, what a story that is for young people. I got cut from my eighth grade team, and I played in the NBA, and I'm a Hall of Fame college basketball player that I played. I was a Hall of Famer for Arizona State. I had a successful NBA career, and I got cut from my eighth grade team. So it talks about never giving up, or ultimately when you talk about God having a plan for you. And interesting when you talk about your brother, was he as tall as you were or not? He was your older brother, yeah.
He was my oldest brother at 6'10". I ended up being, my dad is 6'7". My mom was, and again, all of them have passed away. But my brother was 6'10", my dad was 6'7", and my mom was about 5'9". And so it was, I genetically was very fortunate. And then things worked out where, you know, I kept growing, developing, and then I was a late bloomer. I have a son that's 6'9 and a half, that's 19, and I have a daughter that's 6'4, that's 17. She just got a full ride scholarship to Louisiana Tech.
Oh, that's great.
My son is going to take a little bit of time because he's still growing and he's having all these issues with his bodies, his knees, shin splints, ankle. His ankles are bothering him. So I'm going to start trying. I was overseas for 7 years. So during this crucial developmental stage, I wasn't around. So now I'm back here in San Diego. He's in Chino Hills, California. And we're trying to work a schedule out so I can start really working with him and getting him where he needs to be.
Even at 19, it's never too late. Your career was as a late bloomer. You didn't go right to the Division I college basketball. You started in a junior college experience. So
But I was a player now. Come on now. Man.
Yeah, you were a player. Yeah, you were a player. But
We lost in the final championship of the NCAA tournament. I led the NCAA, ENJCAA in rebounding and blocked that my freshman year. So I didn't know how to play, but I knew how to shot, block shots and rebound. And, you know, I had a presence. So that was half of the battle.
And that's the important thing, and they saw the value of you. A lot of coaches don't see the scoring component, but how important the intangibles of the star player is not going to go in the lane because you're going to just swat it away. That's what I did all the time. When the ball can't, and when the ball's up and it's time to rebound it, everyone else is more focused on scoring. I'm getting the rebound. I'm getting that defensive rebound, outlining it out, and getting the ball right out to the guards so they get the.
Well, how you think I lasted 17 years in the NBA?
Right.
I figured out a role that I said, if I run the floor, if I block shot and defend and rebound, that I can make a living at and do all the dirty work.
Exactly.
That spring. And that's how I lasted 17 years. And so I think kids should understand that, you know, when they're growing, and I always say this because I work with a lot of kids now, work on your fundamentals.
Definitely.
When you're young. I like to work with the 5th, 6th, 7th, and 8th graders because you never know when they're going to have that growth spurt, and they just, you know, like Anthony Davis, you know, he was a guard, and he was working on all his ball-handling skills and all his skill set. And then he had a major growth spurt. So I always encourage them to work on the fundamentals so that when it's all said and done, you know, you are a well-rounded basketball player and not one-dimensional.
And that's what the high school coaches are going to look for. You know, a lot of times there's a lot of politics played in the younger grades. Once you get to high school, the high school coach's got to win. And if he sees that intangibles that they have, basically it goes through. I start thinking about, you know, a little later for my kid, my boy is really young still. I have two boys. One's going to be a guard for sure, but the other one's really tall. And so, but my wife's 5 foot, so I only got a couple tall people of my five kids I have, Alton. But I really look at specifically enough that basically getting them involved, learning the fundamentals is more important than, you know, really polishing the game to the point where you're just competing. It's more about learn these skills now because lots of players don't have the fundamentals once they get to high school. They have one, they're one dimensional. You can't be that kind of player. And you look at it, watch college basketball. Look at these kids and how they don't understand specific things that you and I are playing. I know I played 10 years later. I mean, maybe 13. I got to remember the kind of thing. I played college ball 1 year at McDaniel College, which was Western Maryland then, and was going to play at La Roche. But I played in the WPIL, and we had a starting lineup of 6'9", 6'4", 6'5", lineup. That was pretty big for high school basketball at that time. But the interesting story. So, Alton, you go JUCO, but you played with some interesting players, didn't you, on that team in junior college?
Yeah, you know, we went always to the finals and lost by 1 point. Then then I really played with some great players when I transferred to Arizona State. We had five first rounders on that team. My senior year, we ended up 24-3. I played with Byron Scott. I played with Lafayette Lever. I played with Sam Williams. Of course, myself. And there's another guy by the name of Kirk Nymphius.
I remember all of them. Nymphius played, I think, for the Phoenix Suns at one point, didn't he?
Yes. And the best player of all of us ended up getting hurt. And he was the number one high school player coming out of California. His name was Johnny Nash. And so we just had a plethora, just of guys. And once we start signing and one guy wanted to come because another guy started coming. And then we had a really good coach that was a really, really great recruiter. And he put together an unbelievable. We had a pro team, man. Our front line was 7 feet, 6'10", and 6'9". And then we had Byron Scott and Lafayette Lever at the guard.
Two unbelievable players. Fat Lever, one of my favorite players of all time. I'm a huge Denver Nugget fan, and we all know how great Byron Scott was with the Lakers.
Yeah.
So, I mean, and then you have Alton in the middle. But how? So that Arizona team probably was one of the best Arizona teams ever played in college basketball, right? Would you say?
Yeah.
How far did you guys go in the tournament?
We lost in the Sweet 16, and, you know, that – you know, we it was so crazy because we were a number one, a number two seed, and we ended up playing Kansas and Wichita State. So it was essentially a home game for Kansas.
Right.
And, you know, that just was our demise. And, you know, in the NCAA tournament, it's one and done. If you have an off game, you know, it's over. And that was very disappointing. Very disappointing situation. But during my college experience, like you said before, I played in the Olympics, which was great. We didn't get a chance to go compete in Russia, but I went through the whole process. It was a great experience for me. It was a stepping stone to really show me how to work and really compete at a high level. And then once I got drafted in the NBA, they took it even to a higher level. Because I always been tall, and I was kind of just the game was easy for me. But, you know, once you get on that level, man,
yes,
you got to come with it. You got to come with it because there's a lot of great players.
Exactly, and you played behind Bob Lanier, who was a legendary player when you played at the Bucks. And were the Bucks pretty good? Remind me about that. I mean, I was a fan of yours because I remember playing, I think there was like some, not a video game, it was like a card game of some sort in basketball at that time when I was a kid. And I remember you and switching you up in Lanier in that game where you, like, I forget what the name of it was, where you flip over a card and it's a three-pointer or a block shot or whatever. That's how I remember you really well. Just looking.
He was I was his heir apparent. When they drafted me, Bob was at the end of his career. And so they brought me in, and he was my mentor for about 4 years. And then once he retired, I took over that position. And, you know, we had, during those days, Milwaukee was the top team in the Central Division. Chicago had gotten it together, even though they had Michael Jordan, but they didn't have any people around it. And that's when the East was really tough.
Right.
Now the East is a joke. But I mean, they got bad teams there. And so we won that division 5 straight years. And always used to lose in the Eastern Conference Finals to either Boston or either the Sixers. And the year that we swept Boston, I think it was in 83, 80, 84,
right,
something like that. I said, we finally have gotten over the hump. No, I think it was I don't remember. It was the year that Philly won the championship.
Yes.
So I'm like, we finally got over the hump. And then we had to play Philly in the Eastern Conference Finals, and they eventually won the championship. So we just couldn't get a break. We couldn't buy a break, man.
they need to put that in Wikipedia, Alton. When I'm reading up on Wikipedia, I remember now the Bucks. And in that time, you had Sidney Moncrief, right? What was the team of the Bucks?
We had a younger version, because once they made some trades and brought in, when I got there, they had Marcus Johnson, Junior Bridgman was an unbelievable sixth man. And they had Harvey Ketchen. So then they won.
Harvey's
to get
a
young.
I love Harvey. I had him on my show. He's a fantastic, great guy, Harvey. Yeah, for sure.
Great, great guy. So they wanted to get younger. So they made a trade with the Clippers. We got Terry Cummins, Ricky Pierce, and Craig Hodge.
I remember that trade. Oh, yeah. Yes. Oh.
Yeah. So then that infused some younger players, and we had a good mix of, you know, Bob was kind of at the end of his career, and those guys hadn't passed their peak, but they were getting to the point where, you know, if they were going to get some value out of them, they need to make a trade. So we got that. They brought that team in, and I mean, that's when we really start rolling, man. And that's when we started winning the Central Division, and we were always in the Eastern Conference Finals.
And you did, but you never got that extra stop. So a lot of times in your career, if we look back to it, Sweet 16 with Arizona State, you have the opportunity to go to the Olympics and beat the Russians, and didn't get that opportunity, and then you come so close to the NBA championship. And looking back, here's a question: as athletes were so competitive, do you still look back to that and are sad or disappointed about those experiences, not getting those things that you really had dreams when you were younger?
Well, you know what? You at some point you have to get over it and move on. I mean, it was pretty devastating at the time. Just when you're in the moment and it happens, it's gonna sting you a little bit. But then after you realize, hey, you know, we tried our best, the best team won. I don't have any regrets. I do still feel unfulfilled because I feel like, you know, we had opportunities. And in life, only thing you can do is have opportunities. Coaches can put you in a position to win. We just weren't able to get it done. It just wasn't the days or the series for us to win, to go to the next level. And so then that's why they traded me to Seattle for Jack Sigma. They thought they'd bring in Jack, and Jack could get them over the hump. And then I went out to Seattle, and we ended up doing the same thing because that's when the Lakers were really good. And we upset Dallas. That we were our first year, we were a number 8 seeded team, and I had got hurt the first series. So we beat Dallas, and then we won our second round game. And then, of course, the mighty Lakers, Showtime, was waiting on us.
Oh, yes.
So then we had to deal with that. I played for the Sonics for 3.5 years, and every year we had to deal with the Lakers.
Right. And so, you had Dale Ellis on that team, right? Dale was on that team.
Had Dale, Xavier McDaniel, Dale Preet, Olden Polonies, Derek McKee, you know, Nate McMillan, X-Man, Xavier. So we had a really good young team that, again, we had, just like with all the Detroits and Seattle, when Michael was playing, I had to deal with Bird and I had to deal with Magic. So that's why we couldn't get over that hump with those teams.
Exactly. Wow. I wish I could talk. We could reminisce forever, Alton. We have to talk about life after basketball. I know you played some more and you had that 17-year career, but I want to jump right into ultimately life after. How did you think you were going to handle those things, especially finally being done with basketball, meaning playing, after 17 successful years in as a professional?
Well, the biggest thing you do, you plan ahead. You know, when I was in the NBA – I made a decision, and I made a promise to my mother that I was going to get my degree. And it took me 10 years, man. You won't believe it. From, you know, taking time off, going through injuries, going through divorces, having babies, doing all that. But I stayed persistent, and there was a lady that was over the NBA continuing education program. Her name is Christina Versari. She really inspired me to get my degree. So I stuck with it. Then she is the same person that right. contacted me when I was home from the Philippines to come and speak at a commencement speech. I went there and I spoke, and then she offered me a job there to run the continuing education program, same similar program she did in the NBA, but this was to work with former professional athletes and to continue their degree and to get their degree completion. And so that's what I did for a year. But again, I liked it, but the school was not accredited, and she's working on that now. So it made it hard to get retired players that had to pay for stuff. And so I moved on from that, but it was a great stepping stone. Then I went on to BMW, and I worked for them for a year. I was a fleet director, did that for a year. Again, didn't like the micromanagement part of corporate America, you know, and I just decided that that's something that I didn't want to do. But, I mean, I made a lot of contacts. I know a lot of people. And now I'm strictly doing basketball and working with kids. I have a 501(c) nonprofit, and I'm going into inner cities. I'm going to La Jolla.
Fantastic.
And we're doing clinics. We're doing, and it's called Athlete Initiative. And, you know, we got a lot of different components with health, education, basketball, and that's what I'm spending my full time right now with and loving it. This is the happiest I've been in a long time because I finally found something that I can give back, you know, and help kids and really make a difference in their lives. And I'm also affiliated with the San Diego Police Department. We have an organization there called Salt Pal, where it's the diversion program to help kids. Instead of them going to jail, they have to take a program that we can rehabilitate them and to make different choices. I'm also a part of ALS, which is a Lou Gehrig's disease, and helping people with this incurable disease. And I'm a board member for that, and I'm also a board member with the Athletic Initiative. What I've done is said, I'm just going to get myself involved in the community, give back,
that's great.
Work with kids, and try to help people. And I am the happiest I've been in years.
So, and it's very interesting, Alton, because what you did is you're paying it forward. You saw your success to play 17 years in the NBA, getting to meet so many interesting people, get to travel all over the world, that you want to give back. You see the communities where the kids are hurting. They need that great mentor. They need that great role model. You go in there and you help them and you tell them stories and you let them know.
Yeah.
Life was not always easy, even though I was an NBA player. Life gets tough.
Right.
You got to keep going. I lost my brother, this, that, and the other. And then that connection bond comes, and then before you know it, you are changing people's lives. And that is such a tremendous story, Alton, for sure.
And real quick, I did the prison tour. I went to two prisons and spoke to them, and I got invited to one in Atlanta and one in Tennessee. And I went there and, you know, to try to speak life, give hope, and let them know that, you know, there's people out there that care about them. These guys have paid their debt to society. Some of the guys have been in jail for 23 years, and they have really changed a lot. And I was just encouraging them to stay on that straight and narrow. And they had a different lot of programs that I was talking to them about that they are in prison. And a lot of them are at the last stages of before they're going to get out. The main thing, my message was, look, prepare now.
Fantastic.
Don't wait until the end and start trying to figure out what you want to do, because there's a lot of opportunities out there, and there's a lot of organizations will give you a second chance. And you have paid debt to society. Now it's time to pay debt to your family because you've been away from them for so long.
That's great. Okay, Alton, is there a place we can find information on you? Where can we people find information on some of the stuff you talked about? Where's the best place to go?
Well, I'll tell you what. Can I email that to you? I have your email address, and I have not your email, but your. I can text you all that information if you would like. I can email you, or you can send me your email address, and then I can get that to you.
Fantastic.
But again, the organization is called Athlete Initiative, and there's a lot of components to it. So I would like to send you the information, and then maybe at some later date or to follow up with this conversation. And I'll send it out to you today, and you can kind of give people information on how to contact me and look at all the different things that we're doing in the San Diego community.
All right. Well, Alton, good talking to you. Best of luck and great success in all the things you're doing and paying it forward. And it was an interesting conversation, so thanks for calling.
All right. Thank you.
You're welcome. Bye-bye. You're listening to Total Celebrity Show, and we'll be back in just a moment. We're back to the Total Celebrity Show on the Toll Education Network. Again, TollTutor.net for more information. Twitter, TollTutor, Neil S. Haley, Facebook, LinkedIn, Neil Haley, Instagram, TollTutor, Pinterest, Neil Haley, and Google Plus, Neil Haley. And it just let the interesting interviews roll on and on. And I just, it's such an unbelievable thing. I get to talk to so many amazing people. Bob Newton, superstar with Nebraska. Bob, thanks for calling, and how are you?
Very well, Neil. How are you?
Doing fantastic, for sure. And where did you always want to play football growing up, Bob?
When I was growing up in Southern California, I was rather large as a youngster, so I couldn't meet the weight classification. So I wasn't, you know, they wouldn't let you play if you were over a certain weight and age. So, but I would always go to the youth football games and watch them on Saturday, and then I finally started playing organized football as a sophomore in high school.
Interesting. And so, because you're a big guy, it was a perfect fit for you. And once you got on that field, did you know you could play in the pros someday? Did it come easy to you?
No, not at all. It didn't come easy to me at all. I was very uncoordinated as a sophomore in high school, and I was very gangly, and I was about, I don't know, 5'10", maybe 200 at that time, which was a good size for a sophomore, but, you know, fairly gangly, and I was growing pretty fast, and they had to teach me how to get in the stance, but each year in high school I got better, and by my junior year I was voted most improved player. By my senior year I was most valuable lineman, but still, colleges, basically, there was no interest for four-year school, so I went to a junior college for 2 years, and then I rapidly developed technique and skills and size, and then got offered a lot of scholarships and ended up going to the University of Nebraska.
All right, so you go to the University of Nebraska, and at that time, in the 70s, was it a powerhouse like the years in the 80s and 90s with Nebraska?
No, actually, when I went there, they were coming, my first season there was 1969, and they were coming off 2 6-4 seasons, and they were thinking about firing Coach Bob Devaney, and there was a lot of negativity towards the football program. But in 1969, we went 9-2. We beat Georgia in the Sun Bowl 45-6. And then in 1970, we went undefeated and were declared national champions. And then the 71 team, the 1971 team, was also undefeated and were national champions. And Many outlets have voted them the team of the century in the 1971 Nebraska team. So we got it turned around.
Was it the same coach that got it turned around?
Yes, it was. It was Coach Devaney. Coach Devaney coached through 1973, and then he turned over the head coaching responsibilities to Coach Tom Osborne, who actually recruited me out of California.
He was the
main person that contacted me to recruit.
That's a legendary coach for sure, Tom Osborne. And your coach before as well. But, amazing what that really brought the Nebraska program. You were the beginning of it, right? Of the legacy of what Nebraska football is, it sounds like.
I feel very fortunate and very grateful to be part of that historic turnaround and the progress that we made. They also implemented a strength power conditioning program in the spring of 1969, which I was one of the first players. And the man responsible for that was Boy Epley, who's kind of the godfather of strength training for college coaches. And got to know him, and he and I continued to remain friends. But there's the state of Nebraska really supports the program, and so it was a great time for the fans of Nebraska too.
And that became the team, right? Lincoln and the Cornhuskers. Everyone lived and died Cornhuskers after those two seasons, didn't they? For sure.
Yep, it was a great experience, and then I went from there to the Bears in 71.
And you played for a bunch of different teams as an All-Pro for sure. What was your greatest experience in the NFL? Which team would you say hang my hat on and say that's my team?
Well, I was with the Bears for 5 years and then the Seattle Seahawks for 6 years, and I had great experiences on both teams. I think helping being on the Seattle Seahawks expansion team of 1976 with Steve Largent and Jim Zorn and some guys, that brings a lot of gratitude because that was their first year, and we were, we were responsible to get the franchise off the ground, and I ended up playing with them, as I said, 6 years, and we turned it into a winning franchise by 1978. We were 9-7 after only being in the league 3 years, and then 1979 we were 9-7. We would have made the playoffs in today's the way they have teams eligible to make playoffs today, but back then 9-7 they could get you in there. But then I had a great time in Chicago playing with guys like Dick Butkus and Gale Sayers and Walter Payton. So, and just being around George Halas and that organization was a phenomenal experience too. We weren't winning there too much at that time, but it was still a great experience.
Well, Bob, you have a book for both hands of all those players you played with. To write, have you not written a book yet? I don't know why you haven't, because of those teams playing with the Bears, with those amazing legendary players, and then also playing with the Seahawks and the beginning of the phases of a tremendous franchise, and with some of the players you played with, some great stories to tell for sure.
Yeah, I've talked to some people about the possibility of doing that, writing a book, and so it's definitely in the thinking stage for sure.
You need to contact Triumph Books. That's who you need to contact out of Chicago. Best sports writing book. I have Triumph Book authors on all the time, and I guarantee that.
And what was the name again?
Triumph. Triumph Books.
Oh, Triumph. Yeah. Okay.
They're phenomenal out of Chicago, and oh my gosh, I have all their great players on all the time, and I mean not players and players and authors, but I mean tremendous. And they're always looking for celebrity authors for their writing. So definitely, I think you should think about that. Put that on your bucket list for sure, Bob. All right, so because I tell you, I'd be interested in just learning about the Bears. Could you imagine some of those stories and playing with those legendary players, and then the Seahawks? That would sell a lot too, because how about those Seahawks?
When I look at them now, I mean, I was at the Super Bowl game, and they could be two-time world champion back-to-back.
Oh, don't talk about that, Bob. Oh, man. You know why I'm upset? As a Steeler fan, do you think I wanted the Patriots to win? No.
Right.
No, they're the evil ones.
That's right.
So I was like, you know, and I'm not going to say I'm a huge Seahawk fan because I'm a Denver Bronco fan. I'm a Bronco and Steeler fan. Sure. So it's very hard to, but I wanted the Seahawks to win and I couldn't believe that happened. And so you were at the Super Bowl and you're probably like, okay, they're going to be two-time Super Bowl champions.
Oh, yeah. And I thought it was over. Yeah, the Seahawks, we had the semi-alumni get together there, and a lot of former players showed up. And so it was great seeing old teammates and supporting the Hawks.
Well, so you bleed both teams? Would you say Chicago Bears, too? Or are you back in touch with them a lot and stuff, the organization?
Well, it's been a while. I went back to the 2003 when they opened up the new Soldiers Field, and there was a bunch of us that went back to there. But then I haven't been back there since. But I am going there in June, and I've got...